Hello, this is David B. Wright, National Director of 40 Days for Life, and I am serving as the moderator of this Ending Abortion Mega Webcast event that you are participating in today. Welcome to the event that is training, equipping, educating you on how you can save lives right where you live. As mentioned, my name is David B. Wright. I'm actually calling in today for this event from just outside of our nation's capital of Washington, D.C., and I'm joined on this session by one of the two co-hosts who is helping throughout these different calls, and the co-host that you'll be hearing from during this session is Kristen Hawkins, the Executive Director of Students for Life of America. Kristen, how are you today?
Great. Thanks, David.
Well, let's go ahead and start this session off the way we're going to start every single session of this Ending Abortion webcast event. Let's start with an opening prayer. Kristen, would you mind leading us in that opening prayer?
Sure. Heavenly Father, thank you for this time that we can gather today as your people to learn how we can end abortion in our lifetime. We know that we must rid this nation of this evil and stand to protect mothers and their preborn children. And we know the time is now. Although ending abortion may seem like a daunting task at times, we know that through you all things are possible. Thank you for this time that we can gather together to learn how, as your people, we can stand for the unborn and how we can protect life in our communities, in our states, and throughout our nation. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Kristen. Well, here we are on the Ending Abortion webcast mega event. This is the second session of 10 different hours of content that will be delivered in one day. We've got over 30 speakers. I believe it's 35 presenters that will be joining us throughout these different sessions. 30 different organizations joined forces for this event. And we had many, many more speakers that we had talked to about participating, but they had schedule conflicts. It was amazing to me to have 35 people all available to participate for one event on one day. And we had many, many more good people we wanted to ask but just didn't have room for. So I guess we'll have to do some other events down the road. But the reason that we're doing this Ending Abortion webcast mega event is because, frankly, the abortion crisis has reached epidemic levels here in the United States of America, where this event is being broadcast from, but also around the world. Here in the U.S., more than 50 million children have died from abortion. Millions of women have been wounded. We've seen families torn apart. We have seen the politicians who are literally on the dole out from the abortion industry, who are doing their very best to systematically impose the abortion industry agenda on our entire nation. But even in the midst of that crisis, there is a groundswell of pro-life activity. There is a groundswell of enthusiasm and motivation. I have seen people more encouraged and mobilized than I have ever seen during my time in the pro-life movement. So the purpose of this event was to demonstrate that our movement is very, very rich, diverse, broad. There are opportunities for everybody. It's also to show that we are a united movement that collaborates, working together to do everything we can to end abortion. And this event specifically is trying to educate, equip, and empower you to save lives where you live. This session will focus primarily on the education aspect. And in just a minute, I'm going to ask Kristen to share why it is so important to understand the reality of this abortion crisis. I would also encourage you, if you're blessed by what you learn during this webcast event of Ending Abortion, tell everybody you know to go to endingabortion.com and listen to all the recordings, and make sure that with more than half of Americans identifying as pro-life, let's make sure that every pro-life American has the opportunity to be blessed by this information, be equipped so that they can save lives right where they live. So, Kristen, let me ask you, we're going to talk on this panel about the crisis of abortion. Why is this an important topic to do early on in this event?
Well, David, I think it's crucial that at the beginning of this event, like we do at the Case for Life earlier this morning, that we really set the stage and we understand exactly what it is that we are facing as pro-lifers every day in our communities. And we know as pro-lifers that abortion is wrong. But why is abortion wrong? Why do we have a crisis in the United States, and how did that come about? Those things are crucial for our understanding, to understand going forward what should our strategy be and what steps should we take to end abortion in our communities.
Well, that's what we're going to be talking about during this session, and you're going to be hearing from three absolute top-notch experts on this topic. First, you'll be hearing from Dr. Tony Levitino, a former abortion provider, now a pro-life advocate. You're going to be hearing from David Kapalian from WorldNet Daily, also the author of two phenomenal books that I hope he will mention during his time. And then you'll be hearing from Carol Everett, who used to own abortion facilities and is now a wonderful pro-life advocate that I used to stand side by side working with in Texas when I used to live there. It's going to be a great, great panel. We got a lot of questions in on this topic. We went through. We can't answer all of them, or we'd be on here for 3 or 4 hours just on this panel. So to try to address your questions, we picked out the most frequently asked themes, and those are the ones that will be embedded in the questions that we ask of our presenters. And who knows, maybe we need to do some more in-depth training down the road. This is to cover kind of a 101 level basic fundamental training, and I'm hoping that each of the speakers will also share with you additional resources and places where you can learn more about them and their work and get more active in understanding the abortion crisis and doing something about it. So our first presenter, as I mentioned, is Dr. Tony Levitino, and Dr. Levitino is a former abortionist. And he shares the very unique perspective about why a physician, somebody who's been trained to give life, would end up falling prey to a profession that takes away life. He and his wife, when they converted to pro-life, their story has inspired and educated audiences worldwide. And I think he's going to be able to give us a very unique perspective on the abortion crisis. Dr. Levitino, how are you today?
Very well, thank you, David.
Well, can you give us a little bit of background briefly of your time in the abortion industry and just kind of what got you there and get us up to speed a little bit of where you went?
Well, I graduated from medical school in 1976, and if you asked me at the time how I felt about the abortion issue, I would have told you, I would have hesitated for a minute to tell you I was pro-choice. I mean, this was a decision between a woman, her doctor, and nobody in particular, the baby's father, had anything to say about it. You don't always think of it in those terms, of course. When you're in the abortion industry, you're just there to help patients through their problem pregnancies. So during my time as a resident, I trained to do abortions along with learning all the other things that obstetrician gynecologists learn to be able to become practitioners. During my time as a resident, I did both first and second trimester abortions. Now, second trimester abortions back then consisted of saline abortions, which aren't done anymore, but, you know, was doing first and second trimester abortions and training and did several hundred as part of my training program. Once I got into private practice, I wasn't running an abortion clinic, a little different than some of the people in the abortion industry, but I was running a routine OBGYN office. We did deliveries, we did hysterectomies, but we did abortions as well. And my partner and I got involved in doing second trimester abortions by the D&E method that was developed in the early 80s because we wanted a method of abortion like suction D&C where, you know, it wouldn't take days. I mean, a saline abortion was dangerous, very lengthy, and women would have to go literally through labor for anywhere from 8 to 36 hours, and we wanted a more efficient method of abortion. So, you know, very few physicians would do those second trimester D&E abortions. We saw an opportunity. We trained ourselves to do them, and then we were getting referrals from other physicians to do those kind of abortions.
Mm. Well, let's help everybody understand. When we talk about abortion, sometimes that word becomes so general and people think of it as a political issue or religious issue, and they don't really understand the brutal reality of what abortion is. To help everybody really understand that, can you describe for us a second trimester abortion specifically?
Well, imagine that you're a pro-choice obstetrician gynecologist like I was. Your patient today is 17 years old. She's asleep on an operating room table. She's 20 weeks pregnant. Her uterus is all the way up to her umbilicus. She's felt her baby kick for the last 2 weeks. But as I say, now she's asleep on an operating room table, and you're there to help her with her problem. You walk into that operating room, and you get scrubbed and gowned. And to the right of the operating table is another table where your instruments are located. The first thing you reach for is a suction catheter, a 14 French suction catheter. It's about 9 inches long. It's clear plastic with a hole through the center. And if you can, picture yourself putting that through the cervix and then ordering the circulating nurse to turn on the suction machine. What you see is some pale yellow fluid running through the tubing into the machine. That was the amniotic fluid that was there to protect the baby. Now, if you want to get an idea of how big we're talking about here, 20 weeks, look at your hand from the tip of your middle finger to your wrist. That's the height of a 20-week baby from head to rump, not counting the legs. This is how big a baby we're talking about, fully developed and just maturing inside the uterus. Suction D&C abortions in the first trimester can be done pretty much with those suction catheters, but babies that big do not, you know, 20-week size, don't fit through those little suction catheters.
Right.
You reach for an instrument called the Sofer clamp. It's about 13 inches long, stainless steel, and it has rows of sharp teeth at one end. It's a grasping instrument. When it gets a hold of something, it doesn't let go. One of these D&E abortions, they're blind. You can't see anything. Everything's by feel. And you reach in with that, picture yourself, if you can, taking that Sofra clamp, going up through the cervix, and then blindly grasping for anything you can. And when you get a hold of something, feel yourself pulling, and I mean hard. And when suddenly it pops free, out comes a leg about 4 inches long, which you put down on the table next to you. And reach in that with the clamp again, and reach blindly and grab a hold of anything you can, and then start pulling hard, and out pops an arm about 4 inches long, which you put down on the table next to you. And you reach in with that clamp again and again, and you tear out the spine, the intestines, the heart and lungs. You know, the hard part of the procedure is the baby's head. It's about the size of a plum, and it's, again, you can't see it. But you know you did it right if you've got a hold of something and your fingers are spread about as far as they'll go on that instrument. And you know you did it right when you crush down on the instrument and some white material runs out of the cervix, which was the baby's brains, and then you pull out skull pieces. If you have a real bad day like I had a lot of days, sometimes a little face would stare back at you as you pulled it out. Congratulations. You just performed a second trimester D&E abortion. You just affirmed her right to choose. You just made $600 cash in 15 minutes.
That's the reality. That is what abortion is. So when people talk about it as a woman's right or in so many other different ways that they try to spin the rhetoric, Dr. Levitino, you've just clearly helped everybody understand this is the crisis we're dealing with 1.2 million times a year. Now, Dr. Levitino, you've shared your background in the abortion industry. You've described for us a second trimester abortion, but obviously you're not still in that business. Something led you to convert from being an abortionist to being today a pro-life advocate. What happened?
My wife and I met at the hospital when I was in my training program, and like a lot of other young couples, we were looking forward to raising a family, but found out pretty quickly that we had an infertility problem. And after a series of operative procedures and evaluation, it turned out my wife's infertility physician came to us and said, well, you know, there's one more operation I can try on your wife. It's going to take an hour and a half. But when he walked out of the operating room 4 hours later, he came up to me and said, look, I never tell anybody they're not going to be able to have any children, but don't count on it. Well, you know, we were really set on having a family, and so we set out to adopt a child, and of course anybody who's tried to adopt a child finds out how difficult that is. And it was during this time when we were trying to adopt a child, calling any number we could find to try to find some baby to adopt. And by the way, the best we could do at the time was to get on a five-year waiting list to get on the real waiting list. And it was the first time I had any doubts about doing abortions, that I was pro-choice, and I'm helping my patients. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, I'm also not totally insensitive to the fact that the reason I can't find a child to adopt is people like me that are killing them in abortions. We were, by the grace of God, able to adopt a little girl that we named Heather in August of 1978. And as sometimes happens, you know, after all that effort and all those years, now we had a daughter of our own, and my wife got pregnant the very next month, and now we have two children 10 months apart. Heather and Sean were physically and literally close, and we had our family. We were great, and any qualms I had about abortion simply evaporated, and I went back to business as usual. I went into private practice, got involved in second trimester abortions, the kind of stuff that we described. Did over 1,200 abortions in my private practice, including over 100 D&Es that I described just now. But in 1984, our daughter was killed in an auto accident. And when you lose a child, you know, I know there are a lot of parents listening, and if you have children, you may think you have some idea of what that might feel like. Believe me, if you haven't been through this, you have no idea what it feels like, and I pray to God you never find out. Losing our daughter that way, I remember doing my first D&E abortion after that a few weeks later and starting the procedure that I just described, and I got literally ill. But once you start an abortion, you can't stop. And when I finished that abortion, I know it sounds strange to people, but when I finished that abortion, for the first time after all those years and all those abortions, I wasn't thinking of what a great doctor I was, and I wasn't thinking of a wonderful right to choose, and I wasn't even thinking of the $600 cash I just made in 15 minutes. All I could see was somebody's son or daughter. I mean, and I really looked. I mean, I looked at that pile of goo on the side of the table, and all I could think of was, my God, this was somebody's son or daughter. And that was the beginning of my getting away from the abortion industry.
Wow. Wow. Well, I hope that everybody listening, in addition to recognizing the harsh reality of abortion, I hope they can also understand that many times we look at maybe the abortionist, we look at the abortion worker as the enemy, but they are not the enemy. They are victims of the enemy. And I hope that hearing Dr. Levitino share from his heart about how God gripped him through the tragedy of the loss of his child, I hope that everybody can understand that we need to pray for those in the abortion industry and know that many, many more conversions, we're seeing more of them every year, more and more people can come out as the harsh reality, the crisis of abortion becomes more of an issue in our nation and as people face it on their own. Dr. Levitino, there are a lot of people right now who are on this webcast who are listening to you and they're saying, what can I do? How can I do something to counter this abortion crisis? What would you say to that person if you were sitting across a table having a cup of coffee with them?
First thing you've got to do is educate yourself as best you can. There are so many resources between the internet and a lot of fine books out there. I'll just mention one that I like, and that is Randy Alcorn is the author. It's called Pro-Life Answers to Pro-Choice Arguments. Because, you know, when people have a real heart for this issue, but when people come back with what about XYZ? And sometimes, you know, they just don't know what to say. And I like this resource because it gives you a good guide as to, how do you counter those arguments? I'm going to give you one example. We've been fed a line, and now it's very current with Kagan wanting to go up to the Supreme Court. Right. Kagan was telling, apparently, the ACOG, the American College of Obstetrician Gynecologists, what to put down on their policies for second trimester abortion. So much for the experts at ACOG speaking with their own voice. And we are told over and over and over again that we need partial birth abortion. Now, this is a cut above even what I just described. But we need partial birth abortion or intact DNX or intact DNE abortion. It goes by many names. So that we can save women's lives. This is with a thrust about what ACOG said. Look, I worked in a high-risk medical center for years, and I saw seriously ill women with serious problems that we had to intervene in the pregnancy to save their lives. These things do happen. I always give the example of a lady who came in with a blood pressure of 220 over 140. I mean, this is stroke level. If we don't get the pregnancy ended quickly, she is going to die. And here's a perfect example of somebody who needs to have the pregnancy ended. And I didn't say aborted, I said ended. Okay? Now, we're going to use partial birth abortion to save her life. Except if you are educated and you look at this and you understand that it takes 3 days to prepare a patient for partial birth abortion before you can even do the procedure, you realize how worthless partial birth abortion is in saving women's lives. This woman hasn't got 3 days. She may not have 3 hours. You do what we did. You stabilize the patient, you deliver the baby by cesarean section, and then you save both mom and the baby. And that's exactly what we did in that situation and hundreds of others. I tell people, as a professor in a medical college, I saved hundreds of women from serious problems in pregnancy. And in the process, I didn't deliberately kill a single baby. And that's where you need to be educated to be able to advance those arguments when people say the things that they say about abortion.
Well, Dr. Levitino, you've covered a lot of information. You've helped people understand the crisis of abortion. Certainly during this 1 hour, we can't go into every aspect of it. You mentioned Randy Alcorn's book, Pro-Life Answers to Pro-Choice Questions. His other book that he has on pro-life issues, we will make available to people afterwards, is a downloadable PDF, which is a quick synopsis. And I would recommend others get the resource, the Pro-Life Answers to Pro-Choice Questions. Are there any other good resources that you would recommend for people who want to learn more specifically about the abortion crisis?
You know what I would do? The best local resource, I mean, like I said, we could talk about books or websites all day long, but the best local resource that people can usually find is their local crisis pregnancy center or pregnancy assistance center. You will find people in there, volunteers, counselors, dedicated to fighting against abortion in the most positive way possible right in your own community. There are pregnancy assistance centers all across the country. And if you have a heart for this issue, get involved with your local crisis pregnancy Crisis Pregnancy Center or Pregnancy Assistance Center. You will learn a tremendous amount, and you will save women and babies in your own community.
Mm. Well, last but certainly not least, Dr. Levitino, for those who maybe want to learn more about you and your work, or maybe they're interested in asking you to come in and share your testimony with an organization as a speaker, where can people learn more about you and what you do?
You can. I can be reached through Ambassador Speakers Agency. My wife and I do go out, and much of what we do in pro-life is supporting crisis pregnancy centers. So, in fact, you know, we practice what we preach. We're starting one here in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
All right.
It'll officially open in 3 weeks. So if anybody wants to contact us or learn us more, go through Ambassador Speakers Agency, and you'll find that on the web, and you will find more information about us and how to contact us.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Levitino. I appreciate you. God bless you. Have a good rest of the day. And check him out, ambassadorspeakers.com. If you're interested in having him and his wife come in and share their testimony with your pregnancy center or other organization. Also, he referenced the book by Randy Alcorn, Pro-Life Answers to Pro-Choice Questions. I had to dig up really quickly the name of the other Randy Alcorn book, and that is Why Pro-Life. It's a tiny little book, and it is a very simple way to be able to understand the pro-life position and articulate it well to other people. So let's move on to our next presenter. Our next presenter is David Kapalian, and David is a good friend. He's an award-winning journalist, best-selling author, widely read online columnist, and he's the managing editor of the online news giant WorldNetDaily.com, which probably all of you have spent some time reading articles on there. He's also the author of two very, very powerful books. When I read the first of these, I recommended it to every pro-life advocate I knew because I thought it was such a very well-articulated position about how we got into the situation we're in. That book is The Marketing of Evil. And then his follow-up book, which has just recently come out, is called How Evil Works. David, how are you doing today?
I'm great, David. How are you?
I am blessed, and I appreciate you taking the time to be on this Ending Abortion webcast event. And wonder, before we dive into some of the content you're going to share about the abortion crisis, maybe if you could give us a little bit of background about how you became concerned and got involved in the pro-life issue.
Well, David, I've been a journalist for the better part of 30 years, and I guess I've always recognized that abortion, you know, was what it is. It's the taking of an innocent human life. I remember one time in particular, I kind of remember where I was. You know how you remember where you were when you heard Kennedy was assassinated or the Challenger blew up or whatever, mm-hmm. or when 9/11 happened? I remember the night that I looked at some very graphic abortion photos for the first time. It really penetrated. And I never forgot that. I said, this is such a horror. How can this be legal? And as a journalist, I've been, you know, reporting on it over the years, and most journalists, unfortunately, think that abortion is a good, enlightened, progressive cause, so they don't cover it honestly. But in my reporting, and then the last 10 years at WorldNet Daily, we regularly cover, you know, Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry, and you know, all the criminal activities of Planned Parenthood, how they don't report on statutory rape and lie to their clients, and as well as the kind of racist eugenicist background of that group, and so, which I think is just the responsibility of a real journalist to report what's really going on. This is not a good organization, and abortion is a terrible scourge on this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, as a journalist, you have done some of the most exhaustive research that I have seen and been able to package it up in a way for people to understand. So help everybody to understand. We've heard just how bad abortion is when they heard from Dr. Levitino describing the second trimester abortion. But help people to understand, how could something that terrible as abortion have been legalized in a great nation like the United States of America?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was as gripped as everybody else listening to what Dr. Levitino just told, his whole story about abortion, about what woke him up, and you know, you wonder, anything that is that horrific, that barbaric, how could America, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville, you know, how America is good and great because America is good, and this is the shining city on a hill, how could we do this? You know what it has to do with? It has to do with sex. Abortion comes about because there was sex that occurred before the abortion, and we did something in this country regarding sex in the 1960s, which was, we had something that's variously called, you know, free sex or sexual liberation or sexual anarchy, And essentially, if you're going to have what we have, which is that a person has a basic human right to have sex anytime they want with whoever they want, anytime, without any responsibility for the conceptions that respond that follow that, then abortion has to be legal. It doesn't matter how horrible and graphic it is. And I can tell you that Dr. Leventino could have told you a lot more things and described, as he said, the cut above, the partial birth abortion, the awful things, and the sucking, the, you know, jabbing the knife into the base of the baby's skull and sucking the brains out and all these things. You'd think that people would say, oh, my God, we can't have that in America. But the fact is, if you're going to make free sex the basic paradigm of life, then logically you have to have abortion legal, no matter how horrible it is. That's the basic formula. Now, in The Marketing of Evil, where I basically describe how we were marketed and sold abortion, I interviewed at length Bernard Nathanson, who I'm sure most of the people listening know who he is. He was a co-founder of NARAL, which at the time was the abortion vanguard group that got abortion legalized in the 60s and later on in the 70s with Roe versus Wade. And, of course, Bernard Nathanson, like the other two people on this call, Carol Everett and Dr. Leventino, are formerly with the dark side of the force, and they came over to the light. But Nathanson admits how what they did in the 1960s, their strategy was to capture the news media and thereby capturing the public. And number two, to get the abortion laws changed. And the way they got the news media was, and this is the number one technique for marketing evil, they lied. They fabricated poll numbers. Very few Americans, America was still a kind of a Judeo-Christian country back then, most Americans were against, you know, ripping apart little innocent babies. What they did was they fabricated poll numbers saying 60% of Americans favored legal abortion. At the time, there were approaching 100,000 illegal abortions happening in America every year. They told the press there were 1 million illegal abortions. They jacked it up tenfold. There were approximately 200 to 250-ish women that were dying of illegal botched abortions in this country. But that wasn't enough to make it a cause celeb. They said 10,000. You with me? 200 Absolutely. Becomes 10,000. And the media, which were then, as they are now, kind of liberal and thinking this was a good thing, they uncritically accepted it, as they do today, and they went and reported this. And then when 10,000 women a year are dying from anything, you've got a serious problem. We need to do something. And so they sold the media by lying to them, and the media sold the public, and that led to several states legalizing abortion and eventually Roe versus Wade in 1973, which struck down all abortion laws in all states.
So it all began with lies, and of course today is propagated with lies. And David, if we fast forward to today, decades now after abortion was imposed on our country through Roe versus Wade, Doe versus Bolton, millions of dead children, millions of suffering post-abortive women, the facts are very clear. We now know the humanity of the child. We now know abortion hurts women. How can apparently decent, quote-unquote, pro-choice people still persist in defending what amounts to the torture and murder of innocent babies?
Seems incredible, doesn't it? You'd think Roe would be reversed because we know more now, far more today, than we did in 1973 about fetal development, fetal pain. Babies are viable outside the mother's womb earlier and earlier than they were before due to medical intervention. We know about the disastrous psychological and physical effects on mothers having the abortion. All this, all the technology, the ultrasound, all that is really on the side of life because of the window on the womb says, oh, my God, like happened to Bernard Nathanson. He basically said because of these technologies, he realized this was his patient and not just a lump of tissue. It had an awakening effect on him. And the truth is there are fewer abortionists and fewer abortion clinics than there were some years ago because many medical personnel, like the ones on this call, lost their stomach for this practice. But to answer your question, David, abortion remains legal for the same reason it was legalized originally, our total embrace of sexual anarchy. And that is a world a worldview that has really grown and not diminished since the 1960s. And here's the thing about it. You see, we're not animals. There is a God. Human beings have an immortal soul. America used to know this. We used to be a Christian nation or Judeo-Christian nation, people who, you know, believed in God, believed that human beings were created in God's image. What does that mean? Whatever it means, it somehow means that the human life is precious, and so you don't go and destroy it before babies are born. You don't kill old people when they get old and their quality of life isn't as good and they're too expensive to take care of. There's something precious about them. If we are just animals, then, you know, abortion would be like calling a herd of defective offspring, like if you kept animals, which wouldn't be that big a deal, okay? It wouldn't be the moral holocaust it is. It's because human beings are precious, because there is a God and we have a soul, because there's a spiritual dimension to human beings, unlike animals and plants, that abortion is especially God. So is especially bad. And so I think, you know, what I'm saying is that the belief in God back then made it impossible to have an abortion culture that we have today, which has such a low regard for the value of human life. You know, ultimately, it's like our friend Alexander Solzhenitsyn, you know, who lived through all the terrible Soviet gulags, and at the end of his life, people say, well, why has all this evil happened? You know, 100 million killed by communism in the 20th century. He said, you know, why has all this happened? Men have forgotten God. Mm. That was his bottom line.
Wow. So we've talked a lot about the problem, how abortion was legalized. We've talked about how it still persists. David, I don't want to simply dwell on the problem, and I know that in your latest book, How Evil Works, you actually outline strategies to solve these problems. And why don't you, let's say you're sitting across the table having a cup of coffee with somebody, and you're talking to them about what they can do right now to be effective and something that's totally doable that they can do to stop abortion in its tracks. This is, after all, the Ending Abortion webcast. What would you tell that person?
Absolutely. Well, you know, a lot of people are kind of demoralized. They look at the Supreme Court. They say, oh, we got to reverse Roe versus Wade. We have to pass the Human Life Amendment, which is the holy grail of the pro-life movement. But you know what? There are so many weak points in the abortion supply chain, so to speak, that are vulnerable to intervention. You don't have to wait to repeal Roe versus Wade. I think this is so awesome. And the last chapter of How Evil Works is called Turning the Tables on Evil in America. And the very first example I give deals with abortion. And I talk about sidewalk counseling. This is one of many things, but I love this example because it's an example of you enlist the person's own conscience in his defense. And what happens is basically, and I profile Joe Shidler's work, the Chicago area sidewalk counselors, and I say, look, you're there right before the point of no return. The woman's about to go into abortion clinic, and you're a sidewalk counselor. And you have wisdom. You don't yell, please don't kill your baby, because they're already in denial about that. They already have come to terms with that they have to do this, okay? Instead, you approach them on a basis that they really care about, which is staying alive. And you tell them, you say, listen, several women have died in this clinic in the last year. I have the paperwork right here from the county courthouse. Would you like to see it? Many of them do. And then once they have a little bit of rapport with this woman, they say, look, can I take you to a nearby clinic, one that doesn't have any lawsuits against it? And you can get some free advice and help and a free ultrasound. And then if you still want to have the abortion, you can always come back here. Okay, a lot of women go for that because they sense a little bit of love in that sidewalk counselor. Now, here's the thing, David. Once they go to that crisis pregnancy center and she has that ultrasound, that 4D ultrasound, not the grainy old thing where you can't tell the head from the tail. I remember having those. But seeing a modern ultrasound where she sees her own kicking, thumb-sucking, moving baby. Okay, she's introduced to her own child. In the vast majority of cases, of Focus on the Family says it's 87% of the time. Okay, her own conscience kicks in, and she says, wait a minute, that's a baby. That's my baby. Hey, get out of my face. There's no way I'm having this abortion. And she starts talking about, you know, baby names instead of how to get rid of this problem. No abortion. Game over. And the chapter is full of examples like that where you actually getting people to have their own intimate experience with truth. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, the arguments and the cliches and women's rights, all that goes out the window. This is my baby. I'm not taking his life. I'm for life. So that is that's a good example of what people can do right now. There are these clinics all over the country. They need to get. And I'll tell you what. You're going to ask me about a source of information. I really like the Pro-Life Action League's No Greater Joy, which I think you can actually download online. Mm-hmm. They'll probably have
that's
it as a DVD also. It's a wonderful resource. I know there are many, many resources out there. That's one that I know of that I thought was very good. And somebody who's interested in doing this but wants to get their feet wet and, you know, find out how to do it, and so it's not so daunting, that is a great little tutorial on how to be a sidewalk counselor.
Well, and David, I appreciate you bringing that up, because the whole point of this Ending Abortion webcast mega conference is not to say, well, we're going to end abortion through any specific legislative strategy or some sweeping decision by the Supreme Court. It's to help people understand lives are saved, hearts are changed, sometimes souls are impacted one at a time. And we're going to actually be delving into in future sessions today the pregnancy care centers, Compassion in Action, which are the wonderful ministries that help by providing those ultrasounds to help women make that decision for life when they see their child. Also, we're going to have Joe Scheidler's son, Eric, is going to be speaking on the panel yes. about saving lives outside abortion facilities, specifically about what you're talking about. So I would encourage everybody to continue to attend these different sessions during this webcast to find out more about those. And David, for people who are interested in reading your two books, and I could not recommend these more highly, how can people get access to those books, and how can they learn more about you and your work?
Well, How Evil Works was just released by Simon & Schuster, so that's everywhere, all the bookstores and Barnes & Noble and so forth, and of course online, Amazon or WorldNet Daily. The Marketing of Evil is 2005. It's in some bookstores. But it's certainly available online anywhere from, Amazon or, any of the online booksellers.
All right. And I would recommend those very highly to anybody. And I've always had a standing policy, although with 10,000 people on this event today, I may have to not say this, but I always have said when I've recommended your books, David, to people, I say, if you buy this book and you don't think it's worth every penny you put into it, I'll buy the book back from you and I'll give it to somebody else that it'll benefit. I believe in these books that much. And you can learn more about David Kapelian and his work at WorldNet Daily by visiting worldnetdaily.com. David, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing and have a great rest of the day. Well, our next presenter, our final presenter on this topic of the abortion crisis, is yet another person who knows without a question of a doubt exactly what abortion is all about due to her background. And the person we're going to be hearing from next is Carol Everett. Carol is a very dear friend. I used to live in Texas and got started in pro-life work in Texas, and so became very familiar with Carol, had her in to speak a number of times, worked side by side with her. Carol was involved in the operation of four abortion facilities from 1977 to 1983. She oversaw 35,000 pregnancy terminations, 35,000 abortions. She experienced a profound change in her life when she came to know Jesus Christ as her personal Savior. And she founded a ministry called the Heidi Group, and today is committed to safeguarding the health of women and their babies all over this nation. Carol, how are you doing today?
It is a delight to be with you today, David. Thank you for doing this.
Well, you bet. I appreciate you being here. It's good to have you here. Carol, let's go back a little bit. Help everybody to understand, you know, how you came to where you are today. Give a little bit of background about, you know, where you were in the abortion industry and then how you got involved in the pro-life movement instead.
Well, I'm one of those women who chose abortion. And I will say this before I go on. If one person, just one person, had told me it was wrong, I think I would have stopped. But I didn't. Everyone told me it was all right. It was 2 weeks after Roe v. Wade. I was married for the second time. He didn't want any more children. I had the abortion. And the moment I awoke, and I'm one of those that had it in the hospital, I was asleep, I knew I'd kill my baby. And, you know, there's no one you can share that with, not your mother, not your best friend, not even your husband. And, of course, he thought we'd made the best choice we could. So I denied. My life fell apart around me, and I found something that worked. Every time I told another woman I had had an abortion, I couldn't tell her I'd had an abortion, but I could tell her how good abortion was for her. If she was okay, maybe I was okay. And I very quickly evolved into the abortion industry, selling abortions on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And it was justification. And so I think that we need to recognize that those people inside the abortion clinic are hurting too.
Absolutely. And a good friend, Haywood Robinson, a physician in Bryan College Station, Texas, who was on the first panel of this webcast, used to share with me in person. He said, David, never give up hope on anybody in the abortion business. He said, if there was hope for me to convert from being an abortion provider to a pro-life advocate, there's hope for anyone. And Carol, you and Dr. Tony Levitino are definitely evidence of that. Now, you mentioned that you were involved in selling abortions. How does one sell an abortion?
Well, it's pretty simple, and I think we need to be very aware of it because it's finally coming to light that sex education sells abortions. And what we did was we analyzed. Now, we wanted to be the abortion kings of Texas. We wanted to be the McDonald's of the abortion industry. And our plan was to have four abortion clinics surrounding the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Four or five abortion clinics surrounding the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and that way we could bring them in from other states, because we did a one-day traumatic dilation that Dr. Levitino just described as not acceptable. It takes 2 or 3 days to truly dilate a woman's cervix enough to accomplish a late-term abortion. But we did a one-day traumatic dilation, and one of our clients, one of our patients died or had a hysterectomy or a colostomy, one out of every 500. So we had a high complication rate. But our plan was to be the McDonald's of the abortion industry, and we marketed our abortions because we determined that the woman most likely to have 3 to 5 abortions from 13 to 18 was a teenager. She was afraid to tell her parents about the sexual activity. She believed the abortion would hide it. And if she started using abortion early as a method of birth control, she would continue to use it through her childbearing years. Mm. And so we had a plan, sex education, break down the natural modesty, get them to laugh at their parents and their values, for if you separate them from their parents and their values, they will not tell their parents what they heard. Get them to come to us as the sexual experts, and then we would, of course, either give them a defective condom or a second condom, or we prescribed low-dose birth control pills to the girls. Now, let's just stop for a moment and understand what I said. We gave the girls a birth control pill that, in order to provide any level of protection, had to be taken accurately at the same time every single day, for we knew not a teenager in the world does anything at the same time every day. So we would simply give her the pill and then look at the statistics. They showed that if she went on any method of birth control that she considered safe, that sexual activity went from 0 or once a week to 5 to 7 times a week. The pill would not work, and we could accomplish our agenda of the 3 to 5 abortions. And I am so sorry to tell you that I held the hand of one young woman while she had her 9th abortion. Over a 40% repeat rate in our nation, abortion is truly a method of birth control today.
Mm. Well, Carol, this is truly a crisis, and I think most people are unaware, ignorant, naive about how these sex education programs are being used to sell abortions, what the motive is behind it. It's ironic that the abortion industry, groups like Planned Parenthood that make millions upon millions of dollars selling abortions, are the ones who are pushing for these sex education programs. In fact, I read one study where Planned Parenthood's own internal research showed that students who went through their sex education programs had a 153% rate of sexual activity compared to those who had not gone through those same sex education programs. And ultimately, that means more abortions, more money for groups like Planned Parenthood and individual abortion providers. So this is the problem. This is the crisis. What can parents or individuals do to intervene in these sex education programs, particularly in light of the fact that groups like Planned Parenthood are trying to mandate this through things like the recent health care reform initiatives?
Well, they didn't. They've done it. It's accomplished. The health care plan has $250 million, $50 million a year for how-to sex education. Now, let's stop and remember that this never has to be approved by the budget again. It's an automatic. There's $50 million out there for what they call abstinence plus education. Now, remember, what we want and what we stand for is abstinence until marriage sex education, because that's done the right way. But abstinence plus means, okay, you should abstain, but you're not going to abstain, so here's how to. And so they go into graphic detail and use graphic pornographic pictures as early as first grade to show these children things that will break down the natural modesty, that will separate them from their parents and their values, because they know their parents would be upset by what they're seeing. And if they told them, their parents would come to school, and you parents know your children never want you to come to school.
Right.
And then, of course, they encourage them to get sexually active. And if I'm just go back and just tell you what they do for a moment. Do I have time to do that, David?
Yeah, quickly.
And first, it starts in kindergarten. And in kindergarten, they put the children in a circle, and they go around the room, and they say, what do your parents say to call your private parts? Every family in the world has a different name for their private parts. So by the time those children reach the third or fourth child, of course, the room is all giggling, but they all know their parents don't know what they have. And at the end of the session, the instructor, probably a Planned Parenthood instructor, because the schools will let them come in because they bring their sex ed in free, says, okay, boys, this is what you have. Girls, this is what you have, and don't be ashamed of your private parts. And you can look out on the playground, and they are sharing. First, second, and third grade, the agenda is slightly different. And if you've been watching Fox News and some of the other news reports lately, this is finally coming out that they're doing this. These kids are not interested in intercourse, but they use books called It's Perfectly Normal, It's So Amazing. These are clearly part of Planned Parenthood's marketing plan, but they are not tied to Planned Parenthood any way that you can visibly find, but they're pornography. One book per classroom, and I would encourage people to go to their school libraries and check for those books. It's perfectly normal, and it's so amazing. They let the children view these books, and they start talking about sexual activity. We use little square books with 6- and 7-year-old nude models with diagrams to show the children how to have intercourse. In the fourth grade, they encourage masturbating alone and then in groups of 4 or 5 of the same sex. I have not yet figured out why the abortion movement wants to encourage homosexuality, except that I guess it breaks down God's creation, but that's what they're encouraging. And then in the fifth and sixth grade, this is where I came in, and someone like me comes in and says, your parents don't understand you sexually, do they? How many of you are mad at your parents? And half the room raises their hand, and they have all these rules. They just don't understand you, do they? And when you're, the classroom is nodding with you, you know you have them, and you say, have you had sex yet? If you decided to have sex, would your parents help you find a way to safely have sex without getting pregnant? And, of course, the answer is no, so here's my card. Come to me. Mm. In the back of the room, there was a basket of condoms that the boys could take, and the girls, sadly, would come the next day, and we would prescribe that low-dose birth control pill with that high rate of pregnancy. Mm. David, that's how you market, how you sell abortions.
Well, and Carol, I hope that what everybody can take away from this is, number one, they need to be very concerned about the sex education programs that are selling abortions. Number two, they need to go into the schools and see if those books are in there. And then number three, they need to do everything they can to get those programs out of their schools and out of their communities. Any quick tips you'd have for people on how to get those programs out of the schools?
Well, first of all, don't go alone. Get a group of you so that they can't say that you're the nut, and bring it to the awareness of the newspapers and the radio stations first, so that there is a public awareness of what's going on, and the public opinion can change what's happening. We've just seen this happen in Massachusetts in a small school, that they were giving out condoms and wanted to give them out as early as kindergarten, and the parents stood up and stopped it. So we've got to be involved. We've got to teach our children to have little antenna to know when they're being taught something that is not good for them. We have to stand up and tell our children the truth, and we need to be the sex educators in their lives so they're willing to come to us and speak about those difficult issues.
And Carol, I just want to attest to your credibility on what you're saying here, because when I lived in Texas in Bryan College Station, one of our local school districts, we found those books, It's Perfectly Normal, It's So Amazing. We brought it to the attention of the public. We started circulating petitions. We were counseling with you all the time to guide us through this process. Ended up over 3,300 parents petitioned the school board, spoke out at the school meetings, jammed the school board meetings, and within 2 months, the school board had kicked Planned Parenthood out of the schools and gotten them away from the children where they had been coming in and doing their sex education practices. So you can accomplish a victory over this. And Carol, for people who want to learn more about you and your work, what's the place for them to go?
www.heidigroup.org. And David, I want to say...
You bet, heidigroup.org. Okay.
Yeah, I want to say one quick thing that we have not talked about. Planned Parenthood gets family planning money from the government. In Texas, for instance, last year, they got $22 million for the sex ed and the family planning programs that they offer to our schools free of choice. They charge for what they do to get our children sexually active, and then they charge for the abortions.
Mm. So for somebody who wants to learn more about this topic, what's one recommended resource you would suggest to them?
Well, I believe right now the most important thing is you need to go back and pick up an old book called Grand Illusions by George Grant, and you can certainly get it online, but it's still current because they're still doing those things, if not more graphically. And if you'll stay in touch with the Heidi group at www.org, we're going to be offering parents consent forms to opt their children out of school. Okay. Sex education programs that violate their beliefs.
All right, Carol, thank you so much. I appreciate you so much. Keep up the awesome work, and I appreciate you sharing on this webcast event today.
Thank you for what you're doing. Remember, we win. We're the only side having babies.
That's right. That's right. Eventually, we're going to outnumber them, and we win no matter what. We default to that. Carol, God bless you. Thank you so much. Well, we have covered a lot of ground during this panel number 2 of the Ending Abortion webcast mega event. This panel specifically focused on the abortion crisis. In just a moment, we're going to have Kristen Hawkins, who's co-hosting this session with me, summarize some of the key points that we picked up from this session. I personally want to thank our three presenters. I want to thank Dr. Tony Levitino. Thank you, David Kapalian, for sharing. And thank you, Carol Everett, for just sharing what the reality is of this crisis. And I hope everybody takes away, we don't just dwell on the problem. We get to know exactly the situation we're dealing with, and then we can look to be part of the solution. So each of us can save more lives where we live and ultimately work until that day when no more women cry and no more children die. Kristen, can you give a quick summary of what we've accomplished during this hour?
Sure, David. You know, I was just amazed listening to this web panel, thinking if only we can get everyone who's pro-life in the country listening to this. You know, it started off with Dr. Levitino describing the second trimester abortion process, which I know for all of us listening just broke our hearts. But it's so important that we remember every day while we're in this battle what exactly abortion is. I know for those of us who work full-time in the pro-life movement, sometimes you can go a whole day not even thinking, what is abortion and the children that are going to be killed today because of this horrendous decision? Tony made some great points about working with local crisis pregnancy centers, and so did David, about getting the women into the centers that have free ultrasound so they can see their unborn child. They can see if their child has a heartbeat, and they cannot fall for the lies of Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers. And then Carol, you wrapped this up so great with talking about the root of the problem, the sex education in the public schools, and really motivating, I think, all of us that we can take action and we can stop Planned Parenthood in the schools, which will stop this problem and the scourge of abortion across our nation.
Amen to that. Well, I want to thank everybody for being a part of this panel, The Abortion Crisis. Certainly our speakers, certainly Kristen, my co-host, and all the people attending this session. We have over 10,000 people attending this webcast event throughout the day today. This event has been organized by 40 Days for Life, the organization I'm blessed to work with. And to learn more about that organization, you can visit www.40daysforlife.com. That's the number 40, 40, daysforlife.com. And this event has been co-organized by Students for Life of America. Kristen Hawkins, who you just heard from, is the executive director there. Their website, studentsforlife.org. Also, many of these speakers were able to get connected for our event today through our good friend Gloria at Ambassador Speakers Bureau. If you need a pro-life speaker for an event, visit ambassadorspeakers.com. And that brings us to the end of the panel on the abortion crisis. Our next topic is going to delve specifically into Planned Parenthood and that organization's abortion empire. We are now a fifth of the way through the content of the Ending Abortion Mega Webcast. The time is just flying by. For those of you who want to attend the next session, you can go to endingabortion.com/event, endingabortion.com/event. And on that page, scroll down to the next topic, Planned Parenthood's Abortion Empire. Click the Attend This Session button. It'll pop open the new webcast window, and you can listen in on that session as well. If you're listening to the recording of this event after the fact, same thing. Go to endingabortion.com/event. Go to the next session you're interested in listening to. Click on that page and the webcast panel will pop up so you can listen to the recording. My last thought is that to whom much is given, much is expected. If you have been blessed, if you've been educated, empowered, equipped during this panel, why don't you tell at least 10 of your friends to go to endingabortion.com. They can sign up there to access all the recordings absolutely at no charge. We've given this all to you for free, and we hope that you will freely share it with other people. So that brings us to the end of the abortion crisis. For those who are continuing on to Planned Parenthood's abortion empire, we look forward to talking to you there in just a few minutes. Thanks, everybody, for being a part. God bless, and we'll talk to you soon.